The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Florence Nash from Triangle Radio Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from AARP Magazine for June and July 2018, maybe a little something from Money Magazine, maybe a little something from Online. We'll see how it goes. But meanwhile, today's programming is generously underwritten by Salibi Chiropractic, and Salibi Chiropractic welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. Call them at 919-782-4733. Again, that's 919-782-4733. Now we're going to start off with a profile on Willie Nelson, which is from, as I said, the June-July 2018 issue of AARP Magazine. This is written by Rich Cohen. At 85, Willie Nelson knows the secret to a life well lived. For 60 years, country music outlaw has set the bar for being true to yourself. Willie Nelson turned 85 in April, and though he still tours, drinks, vapes, writes, and golfs, he's smart enough to know where he is. On the flip side, the back nine, it gives him freedom. He's down to essential things now, with time for only what he truly loves, like his wife and children, like his famous guitar, Trigger, the one with a hole worn through the top from strumming, like Frank Sinatra and country music. Willie's taught us so much, how to be an honest outlaw, how to properly wear a bandana, how to listen, and how to be cool. Now just one lesson remains, how to remain yourself while getting old. I don't think that my attitude has changed, he told me. I'm still doing what I want to do, and I suggest everybody do the same thing. I could try to sell you on the importance of Willie Nelson, but why? He notched his first hit as a songwriter in 1960 with a tune called Family Bible. In the decades that have followed, he's performed on 24 platinum or gold albums and composed dozens of pop and country hits, including iconic, timeless numbers such as On the Road Again, Always on My Mind, and Me and Paul, about wild times on tour with his drummer, Paul English. He's appeared in more than 40 movies and headlined thousands of sold-out concerts. He smoked a joint on the White House roof during the Carter administration in 1977, organized Farm Aid, the annual benefit for American family farmers, in 1985, and made more than a few men reconsider the practicability of braids. He has his own satellite radio station, Willie's Roadhouse, which is partly programmed by his daughter Paula. He has his own brand of weed, Willie's Reserve, a bespoke variety that's been well-funded by venture capitalists. Some of the labels in that line carry Willie's sleepy-eyed countenance, making him a kind of Captain Morgan for the Bloodshot set. He was at the center of a group of runaround country music pals with Waylon Jennings, Johnny Cash, and Kris Kristofferson, who played together as the Highwaymen. As one of two survivors of that crew, Willie stands as a last living link between Hank Williams, the Babe Ruth of honky-tonk, and Blake Shelton, a country star of the moment. Of course, there have been hard times, for this is country music. Drug busts and failed marriages. The first marriage, which lasted 10 years, gave Willie a lot of the heartbreak material that still turns up in his sad songs. And in 1990, after Willie followed some disastrous financial advice, the IRS seized about everything he had, saying he owed $32 million in back taxes, with the exception of his guitar and his voice, which he used to climb back out of the hole. These days he seems more joyful than ever, as satisfied as any country singer who's lived past 30. His album count is well over 100, and his latest, Last Man Standing, features all new original songs. He's at work on a collection of Sinatra tunes, including My Way. But Willie does not like to talk about his achievements or place in history or how it will all be tallied when he's gone. Sing about it, write about it, sure. His current live show includes Still Not Dead and Roll Me Up and Smoke Me When I Die. but discussing his legacy with a reporter is the worst kind of bad luck. He wants to talk about his life instead. He grew up in Abbott, Texas, a blink-and-you'll-miss-it spot 70 miles outside Dallas. They say the population never changes, he told me. Every time a baby's born, a man leaves town. His parents divorced when he was an infant, leaving Willie and his older sister Bobby, who gives his band its piano distinction. Her instrument sounds as rickety as a piano in a saloon in Deadwood, South Dakota, circa 1885, to be raised by their devoted grandparents. Comfort came via radio, old-time music wending through a Texas night. It suggested another kind of existence. At some point, Willie picked up a guitar. I started when I was 5 or 6, he told me. I had one of those old Sears and Roebuck guitars with the strings high off the neck. Your fingers literally would bleed. When they healed up, though, they were pretty tough. He was soon singing and playing at churches and in town halls, his sister hammering away at his side. Other things happened. He joined the Air Force, worked as a door-to-door vacuum and encyclopedia salesman, and as a disc jockey, and wrote. Those first songs came under the influence of country legends. Bob Wills era, he said, Spade Cooley, Tex Williams, all those great western swing bands. Flat broke, Willie headed to Nashville, Tennessee, the mecca of country music. That was 1960. He worked his way into the late-night lineup at Tootsie's Orchid Lounge, which was across the alley from the Grand Ole Opry. Singers and songwriters partied at Tootsie's from can till can't. It's where Willie debuted the songs, many now considered classics, that would become career-defining hits for other artists. Hello Walls, Nightlife, Funny How Time Slips Away. One night he played a demo for Charlie Dick, a manager who happened to be married to Patsy Cline. Dick took Willie home, woke Cline, and made Willie play her the demo tape. It was called Crazy, and it went top 10 for Cline in 1961. Released before she died, it's forever associated with the sadly beautiful mood of that short life. Willie had a record contract of his own, but his voice was different from what you usually heard on the country charts. It had that old western thing, the twang, but it was sophisticated, too, all about emphasizing certain words and drawing out certain syllables. It was only when he moved back to Texas that he found his audience and became not just a star, but the biggest star in country music. The rest followed as in a dream, surprising yet inevitable. Records and movies, sold-out stadiums, tours. He let his hair grow, braids thrown back, took up marijuana as a way to settle his mood. Before dope, he said, he was angry a lot of the time. His face became famous in the way of a few other faces, John Wayne, Dolly Parton, Louis Armstrong. It represented not just a catalog of songs, but a way of being in the world. By the mid-1970s, he'd become that rarest of stars, an icon admired by even bigger icons. Bob Dylan recalls meeting Willie and his sidekick, English, at film director Sam Peckinpah's house in Mexico in 1972. Willie and English had driven down there in an old blue Mercedes 300 from Texas, Dylan said. We were sitting around in the living room, and Willie played some of his songs, Nightlife, Hello Walls, Crazy, all the great ones. I thought these were the most perfect songs that ever had a right to be written. I thought he was a genius then, and I think the same thing now. I've listened to Willie Nelson all my life, but fell in love with him in 1992. It happened in a bar in New York City called The Lion's Head. One night I happened to play his version of Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain on the jukebox. It's a Fred Rose song, unspeakably sad. The story of a man mourning his wife and looking forward to meeting her in the next world. It carries echoes of the oldest American music. It's an intimate hillbilly whine. Willie recorded it in 1975 for Red-Headed Stranger, one of his first million-selling albums. It was among the breakthrough songs that took Willie from Nashville 1960 into the 1970s and beyond. He found his mature style on that song, realized that he could sing anything and make it new. I'd get drunk on the sort of drinks I figured Willie would order, tequila, beer, line up my quarters and play the song till the minute the rail begged me to stop. When you're 22 and lonely and far from home, you feel sorry for yourself in a way that is the essence of country music. His voice was humorous and sad and full of wisdom. I knew he'd understand everything. If I ever did get to meet Willie Nelson, I promised myself I'd ask him the secret of life. I caught up with Willie on his tour bus 26 years later. It was in March, just before he went on stage at the Peace Center in Greenville, South Carolina. He was sitting at a small table in back. Looking over his shoulder was Annie, his fourth wife, a makeup artist who met her husband in 1986 on the set of his made-for-TV movie, Stagecoach. Anne Marie D'Angelo has been by Willie's side through his health scares, pot busts, tax problems. Through thick and thin, he said, you can't ask for anything more than that. She travels with him and looks after his health, got him into bicycling, organic foods, and living as if he intends to last. Annie and I have been married since 1991 and found a way to make it work, Willie has said. They have two adult children, Lucas and Micah, good musicians who often perform with Willie and their Aunt Bobby. Willie was married three times before and had five other kids. In 1991, his oldest son, Billy, died at age 33. It's something Willie never talks about, but it can be heard between every note of his most wrenching songs. When we met, Willie was wearing a black T-shirt and jeans. He's always looked like Willie. It's one of those rare things you can count on, but looks the most like Willie now in the middle of his ninth decade. His eyes are mischievous. One braid hangs down his chest, the other down his back. His smile is wry, amused. When he laughs, he tilts back his head and stares at the ceiling. In short, Willie Nelson looks exactly like you want Willie Nelson to look. I'd heard he does not like to talk, that he lets silence fill the gap between him and his interrogator. But I didn't find that. Then again, I didn't ask him dicey questions about politics or marriages. Instead, we talked about what he has loved, Hank Williams and Django Reinhardt, the highway when you're sober and the highway when you're drunk, the last bit of beer in the bottle, the last hour of night in the day. Like Elvis, for example. Did you know him? Yeah, I met him a couple of times, Willie said. He did Always on My Mind and Nightlife. Why did he have such a hard time, I asked, meaning the isolation and the jumpsuits, the Memphis Mafia pill addiction and early death? Well, it ain't easy, Willie said. Once you think it's easy, you're in trouble. To achieve fame, he added, you got to want it. And then when you get it, you've got to still want it. A lot of people, when they get it, say, wait a minute, this is too much. Willie once said that singing the same sad songs night after night had, in the past, driven him to the bottle. Why, though? I've always found that listening to sad music made me feel better. Whenever me or George Jones or whoever's singing those sad songs, there's people out there that can relate to it, and that's good, he told me. The problem can be that getting in that emotional state to sing that sad song, to make all those people happy, you're really putting yourself in a negative situation where you want to drink more. Whenever I asked about influences, the conversation turned to Hank Williams. Willie looked over my head when talking about Hank as if he could see him out there in his sequin nudie cone suit. He was an incredible writer, sang with so much feeling, Willie said. He was a sick man from the time he was born till he died, a sick man. He had a bad back and was always on some kind of pain medications or alcohol or whatever it took to get him up to the show. And he had a hard life, died at 29. But nobody wrote better songs than Hank. It was the simplicity, melody, and a line anybody could understand. This led to talk of the old days when the highway turned to dirt as soon as you left town. What was Nashville like in the 60s, I asked. Nashville's always Nashville, he said. It's where you take your goods to sell, and if you got anything good, cool. If you don't, they'll let you know pretty quick. One thing about having a country hit is you can live on it forever. There are people who always like Hank Snow's I'm Moving On, and every time he toured, they'd want to hear that. In the 80s, Frank Sinatra once opened for Willie at the Golden Nugget in Las Vegas, and they appeared together in a TV spot for NASA. Willie considered Sinatra a close friend. These two icons could not seem more different, and yet both were utterly unique vocalists who reinvented their genres. Do you feel like you learned anything from Sinatra? I learned a lot about phrasing listening to Frank, Willie said. He didn't worry about behind the beat or in front of the beat or whatever. He could sing it either way, and that's the feel you have to have. I asked about Frank's work in the 70s when he turned out all those weak pop songs. I wondered if, after you get to the top, it's easy to lose your way. You got these guys over here saying you ought to do this, and those guys over there saying you ought to do that, Willie responded. Next thing you don't know what to do. Willie was almost out of time. In a few minutes, he'd have to head out on stage where he'd summon all the ghosts, play all the hits. The audience would be older than it'd been once, but you could tell the fans did not feel that age when Willie ran through Whiskey River and If You Got the Money, I've Got the Time. It's the sort of music that makes you wish you were back at the beginning when the road seemed like it would go on forever. I stood and he stood and we shook hands. I felt warmth pass from him to me. I told him what Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain had meant to me when I was 22. He nodded like he already knew. Then, before he could slip away, I asked him the secret of life. It's simple, Willie said. Do what you want to do. If I don't want to do it, forget it. But if I do want to do it, get out of my way. Rich Cohen, who wrote this, is the author of 13 books, the most recent of which is The Chicago Cubs, Story of a Curse. Now, it's still high season for traveling, so let's turn to a blog from a guy who's a professional traveler. He maintains this online blog called Expert Vagabond, and he's written this thing called My 30 Best Travel Tips After 7 Years Traveling Around the World. This is Matthew Karsten, the author of Expert Vagabond. Travel Tips. It's now been 7 years since I sold everything and left the United States to travel the world. These are the best travel tips I've discovered along the way. It all started when I took a one-way flight from Miami to Guatemala City, leaping nervously into the unknown and leaving much of my old life behind while embarking on an epic travel adventure around the world. It's been a wild ride, and I've learned a lot since I first left. So to celebrate my travelversary, I've decided to share a collection of my best and most useful travel tips to help inspire you to make travel a priority in your life. Feel free to share your own best travel tips. 1. Patience is important. Don't sweat the stuff you can't control. Life is much too short to be angry and annoyed all the time. Did you miss your bus? No worries, there'll be another one. ATM's out of money? Great. Take an unplanned road trip over to the next town and explore. Sometimes freakouts happen regardless. Just take a deep breath and remind yourself that it could be worse. 2. Wake up early. Rise at sunrise to have the best attractions all to yourself while avoiding crowds. It's also a magical time for photos due to soft, diffused light and usually easier to interact with locals. Sketchy areas are less dangerous in the morning, too. Honest, hard-working people wake up early. Touts, scammers, and criminals sleep in. 3. Laugh at yourself. You will definitely look like a fool many times when traveling to new places. Rather than get embarrassed, laugh at yourself. Don't be afraid to screw up and don't take life so seriously. Once a whole bus full of Guatemalans laughed with glee when I forced our driver to stop so I could urgently pee on the side of the road. Returning to the bus and laughing with them gave me new friends for the rest of the journey. 4. Stash extra cash. Cash is king around the world. To cover your fanny in an emergency, make sure to stash some in a few different places. I recommend at least a couple $100 worth. If you lose your wallet, your card stops working, or the ATMs run out of money, you'll be glad you did. Some of my favorite stash spots include socks, undershoe inserts, a toiletry bag, around the frame of a backpack, even sewn behind a patch on your bag. 5. Meet local people. Make it a point to avoid other travelers from time to time and start conversations with local people. Basic English is spoken widely all over the world, so it's easier to communicate than you might think, especially when you combine hand gestures and body language. Learn from those who live in the country you're visiting. People enrich your travels more than sights do. 6. Pack a scarf. I happen to use a chemag, but sarongs also work great. This simple piece of cotton cloth is one of my most useful travel accessories with many different practical applications. It's great for sun protection, a makeshift towel, carrying stuff around, an eye mask, and much more. I can't tell you how many times a scarf has come in handy around the world. 7. Observe daily life. If you really want to get a feel for the pulse of a place, I recommend spending a few hours sitting in a park or on a busy street corner by yourself, just watching day-to-day life happen in front of you. Slow down your train of thought and pay close attention to the details around you. The smells, the colors, human interactions, and sounds. It's a kind of meditation, and you'll see stuff you never noticed before. 8. Back everything up. When my laptop computer was stolen in Panama, having most of my important documents and photos backed up saved everything. Keep both digital and physical copies of your passport, visas, driver's license, birth certificate, health insurance cards, serial numbers, and important phone numbers ready to go in case of an emergency. Back up your files and photos on an external hard drive as well as online with software like Backblaze. 9. Take lots of photos. You may only see these places and meet these people once in your lifetime. Remember them forever with plenty of photos. Don't worry about looking like a tourist. Are you traveling to look cool? No one cares. Great photos are the ultimate souvenir. They don't cost anything, they're easy to share with others, and they don't take up space in your luggage. Just remember, once you have your shot, to get out from behind the lens and enjoy the view. 10. There's always a way. Nothing is impossible. If you're having trouble going somewhere or doing something, don't give up. You just haven't found the best solution or met the right person yet. Don't listen to those who say it can't be done. Perseverance pays off. I can't tell you how many times I've been told what I want isn't possible, only to prove it wrong later when I don't listen to the advice and try anyway. 11. Smile and say hello. Having trouble interacting with locals? Do people seem unfriendly? Maybe it's your body language. One of my best travel tips is to make eye contact and smile as you walk by. If they smile back, say hello, in the local language, too. This is a fast way to make new friends. You can't expect everyone to just walk around with a big stupid grin on their face. That's your job. Usually all it takes is for you to initiate contact, and they'll open up. 12. Splurge a bit. I'm a huge fan of budget travel as it allows you to travel longer and actually experience more of the fascinating world we live in, rather than waste your hard-earned money on stuff you don't need. In fact, you can travel many places for $50 a day with no problems. That said, living on a shoestring gets old after a while. It's nice and healthy to go over your budget occasionally. Book a few days at a nice hotel, eat out at a fancy restaurant, or spend a wild night on the town. 13. Keep an open mind. Don't judge the lifestyles of others if different from your own. Listen to opinions you don't agree with. It's arrogant to assume your views are correct and other people are wrong. Practice empathy and put yourself in someone else's shoes. Embrace different possibilities, opportunities, people, suggestions, and interests. Ask questions. You don't have to agree, but you may be surprised what you'll learn from the people you meet during your travels. 14. Try Couchsurfing. Couchsurfing.org is a large online community of travelers who share their spare rooms or couches with strangers for free. If you truly want to experience a country and its people, staying with a local is the way to go. There are millions of couchsurfers around the world willing to host you and provide recommendations. Expensive hotels are not the only option. There are all kinds of cheap travel accommodation options out there. 15. Volunteer occasionally. Make it a point to volunteer some of your time for worthwhile projects when traveling. Not only is it a very rewarding experience, but you'll often learn more about the country and its people while also making new friends. There's a great site called Grassroots Volunteering where you can search for highly recommended volunteer opportunities around the world. 16. Pack earplugs. This should actually be number one on the list. I love my earplugs. Muffle the sounds of crying babies, drunk Australians, barking dogs, honking horns, natural gas salesmen, and more. A traveler's best friend. If you're looking for other gift ideas for travelers, make sure to check out my ultimate travel gift guide for those travelers in your life. 17. Don't be afraid. The world is not nearly as dangerous as the media makes it out to be. Keep an eye out for sketchy situations, but don't let that be the focus of your whole trip. Use common sense and you'll be okay. Most people are friendly, trustworthy, generous, and willing to help you out. This goes for women, too. I realize I'm not a woman, but I've met plenty of experienced female travelers who agree. 18. Get lost on purpose. If you want to see the parts of town where real people live and work, you need to go visit them. The best way to do this is on foot, without knowing exactly where you're going. Write down the name of your hotel so you can catch a taxi back if needed. Then just pick a direction and start walking. Don't worry too much about stumbling into dangerous neighborhoods either, as locals will generally warn you before you get that far. 19. Eat local food. Think you already know what Mexican food tastes like? You're probably wrong. Taste a bit of everything when you travel, especially if you don't know what it is. Ask local people for recommendations. Eat street food from vendors with big lines out front. I've been very sick only twice in my travels. Don't be scared of the food. Finally, a bonus tip, travel more. If there's one thing I've noticed over the past 7 years, it's that many people back home love to tell me how lucky I am while making excuses why they can't travel. It's too expensive, they can't get time off work, who will feed their pets? When I suggest solutions to these problems, they still don't take action. Why? Because they're often hiding behind the true reason. They're scared. You don't need to sell all your worldly possessions and become a homeless vagabond like I did. Just get out there more than you do now. Start with a weekend in a different state. Then maybe try a week in the country next door. The new car, the remodeling project, the iPhone, they can wait. If you truly want to travel more, you can make it happen. Career breaks are possible. You have friends who would love to watch your pets. It's a big, beautiful, exciting, and fascinating world out there. Explore some of it now rather than later. Now, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. I hope you'll come listen next time and that you've enjoyed this. I'm Florence Nash, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and our programming today is generously underwritten by Salibi Chiropractic. Salibi Chiropractic welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. Call 919-782-4733. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, give us a call at 919-832-5138.